Due to the graphic nature of this podcast, viewer discretion is advised.
Psst.
Psst.
What?
Do you see how Emilio's checking out the priest?
Not really.
Seriously. He keeps winking at him and blowing kisses.
Shh.
I think they'd be cute together. I totally ship them.
What? How could you? Emilio and Juan have been together for years.
That's just his servant.
Well, I think there's something deeper going on between them.
Shh!
Besides, shipping a holy man with anyone is wrong.
No, it's not.
Whatever you may think, that ship is just wrong on so many levels.
Well, screw you. I didn't ask for you to attack my ship.
Excuse you, we're in church.
Shh!
Hello, Fujitos. So we just finally got Patreon to work with us this time, and we found out which manga we're going to review next, and it's Viewfinder. And our Patreon members chose Right. That's the one that has a musical rendition. We'll also review the musical along with the OVA in April. That's when that episode should come out.
I can't believe they made that into a musical.
I know!
It's like, gonna be like a Too Many Spider-Men. Like, how on earth could that be a musical?
I know, I was wondering how they did that, so. Yeah, we'll discuss that more when we actually review it. I watched like the first 5 minutes, but so far I need to go back and watch it. It's like a legit 2-hour musical.
Wow.
So I'm impressed already. With that announcement out of the way, we're just gonna jump right into reviewing In God's Arms, or as it's sometimes called, In the God's Arms by Yonezu Nakota.
Yeah.
So it was originally published in 2004 by Biblos. It also, I guess, goes by magazine BX Boy.
Yeah.
And it has all 4 volumes that are also in English by Manga Reborn. That came out in 2015. You can also get digital copies, so it is out there. Now, if you're looking to also read this manga online, I noticed that the description it gives is for its spin-off series, Michiru Heya, which is also called A Room Full of Love. It's not really long. It's 2 volumes. It came out in 2006, so not long after In God's Arms. It essentially takes place in the same place. It's like a collection of short stories that features an all-boys dormitory, so we'll get into that more.
Yeah, it's like a Catholic school deep in the mountains in Europe somewhere.
Yeah, yes, in Europe. I'm not sure about the timeline, but it looked like the early 1900s by their dress. It was very weird.
Well, yeah, their uniforms are really, there's a lot of strange fashion choices that go
yeah,
on.
Yeah, they don't really give a year.
But at one point in the last volume, or second last volume, somebody has a cell phone, but like the kind of cell phone they would have had when it was published in 2004, like an old school cell phone. I guess it's supposed to be modern.
Ish?
It doesn't really matter, I guess.
I guess not. But yeah, so like I said, when you look online, the description they give you is for Michiru Heya. And that follows a boy named Reynold, who goes by Reno. He gets a new roommate named Roger, who's a prostitute that pays him to stay out of their room whenever he has clients over. So Reno is afraid at first that he's going to get preyed on, but they eventually become friends. Secrets and tragic pasts are revealed, and their friendship becomes something more. Which kind of follows like the same storyline like all these short stories do. It doesn't start off so great, but then there's like a happy, maybe not a happy ending, but it's like resolved. Their issues are resolved.
Yeah, and that one is a lot, I don't know, sweeter and like less problematic.
Yeah, and it's longer compared to the others.
I don't know, I like that one a lot better. I don't know. That one was good compared to the rest of In God's Arms, which I didn't really care for. Spoiler alert, that's how this is going to go.
Yeah, so because like these are like just short stories in manga form, we're just going to go chapter by chapter, which is essentially like a different story each time.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just hit it off with volume 1, chapter 1. We're introduced to 3 characters. There's Uran, who's pretty much Shota material. He says he has a Buddhist family, but he is atheist, and he's in a Catholic school, so this is going great already. Then we meet Marius.
So one thing about this is the translation, I read Scanlations, actually.
Me too, I'm sorry.
But, it's hard, I guess, because all of their names are, like, European names, pretty much,
okay.
And so the way that they transferred it from katakana into English, sometimes varied based on who was translating it that day. Like in Michiruhea, that happened, like Roje or Roger.
Yeah, I was like, what's so, Roje?
Yeah.
Like, that didn't go too well. I was it's Roger.
So it's hard to know what their names were going to be because the author may have just made some of them up. So I don't know.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Marius, I guess.
Yeah, so he's the... You're going to need notes when you're, like, reading these because their names aren't introduced automatically. Mm-hmm. It's not until, like, a couple of pages in or until another random character shouts their name that you figure out who they are, which is kind of one of the things that, like, annoyed me.
Yeah.
So that's why I had notes. So Marius is, like, tall, he has black hair, and he's Muslim. His mother was Muslim as well, but his dad, I guess, is Catholic and pretty much dumped him off at this Catholic school for... whatever reason, just to get him out of his way. And then the final character we meet is Ginger. He's blonde.
Presumably he's Ginger.
That's but, what yeah. I was thinking. I was but, like, is yeah. this like a South Park reference where they're just like calling him Ginger?
He's blonde, but if he were colored in, I bet his hair would be reddish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in this story, Marius has a crush on Ginger, and he's buying some, I guess, aphrodisiac drug off of
him. Some kind of drug, yeah.
Yeah, it's in powder form, I guess. So the only reason he's buying these drugs is to see Ginger, despite being in the same grade from my understanding. And it wasn't clear if Ginger really reciprocated those emotions with him, or he was just like teasing him and dragging him along. But anyway, Udon has a crush on Marius, and he came out of nowhere saying, I love you, I want you, it should be me, not Ginger. And I'm like, kid, where do you get off? Like, first of all, what age is he?
I don't know. Is he a first year? Is that what he is? So if he's a first year, he's in like seventh grade.
Probably. Oh, gosh.
So yeah, he's young and small and like...
He looked under 18. Yeah.
No, he definitely was. The other ones I think were in their like... almost maybe they were the final year. They were like seniors and he would have been like in junior high.
Yeah, probably. I think
it's a 6-year school, like the final
okay,
6 years.
Okay, that was never really clear. I thought it was like a high school kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like, correct me if I'm wrong, I think in British schools, sometimes high school is 6 years, like first former, second, sixth former. And so I think theirs starts like, where ours starts at seventh grade. Like it would be our seventh grade to 12th grade is their like six forms or something like that.
Okay.
Not exactly certain about that. But I think it's going off of that thing because I think they go up through 6 years at this school and then they graduate and go to college or whatever they're going to do. So I'm guessing a sixth year is about a 12th grader.
Okay.
And a first year would be about a seventh grader.
All right. Because, that was so awkward.
Yeah, it wasn't explained well kind of how this school works.
Mm-mm.
You're just kind of thrown into it.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of like background setup that the author does. It's just that you're there and they're in these very elaborate, like stupid uniforms.
Yeah, it looked like colonial Britain almost.
Yeah, they're like, they have pants and their shoes have heels. Yeah, it's a tails kind of situation.
What is that, like an ascot on?
Yeah, an ascot. And sometimes when you see it from the back, there's like a corset back, which is really strange. Mm. It's really weird. And then when they're out of those clothes, when they're in their regular clothes, there's a lot of questionable fashion choices being made there too. Like somebody had like a plaid long sleeve shirt with a different plaid vest on over it. Like, this isn't even in color, and I'm just rolling my eyes.
Your eye twitch, like, whoa, God. For this one, like, just reading it, there were a lot of awkward jumps, like, from one scene to another, and that's why it was so confusing, like, why I felt there wasn't a whole lot of explanation on their relationship. Like, in the middle of it, 1 minute, Marius is talking to one of the priests, and then Ginger walks in out of nowhere. Ginger gives him a hand job, and then it's a cut to Udon, who comes into Marius's dorm, and he starts hanging out, and Marius is just explaining how their friendship evolves.
Yeah.
And it's just so awkward.
Yeah, I guess Udon and Marius are supposed to be friends because they're both non-Christians, or they're both non-Catholics. One comes from a Buddhist family, one is his mother's Muslim, and so everybody, they treat Marius like a, for some reason whoever the translator was used the word pagan, which was kind of weird. I'm guessing they meant just a a non-believer.
They're not wrong, actually. So having been in Catholic school, it's like anyone who is not Catholic or Christian is wrong. Like, so that was my childhood.
Okay.
Today, I truly do believe it's different that they treat other people from a different religion differently. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like even when I met my first Jewish friend, I was like, you just seem so wrong. And it's like, no, like I eventually took like a history of religion class that delved into who wrote the Bible and everything. And honestly, it's like Judaism, Christianity or Catholicism and Islam. I mean, you're worshiping one and the same God, but by different means. Right. You have different traditions.
So that's
and stuff.
A Catholic attitude that they're translating there.
Yeah,
that makes
like
sense.
we're better than you, essentially.
Right. Yeah, because even though Islam is not a paganistic religion, I guess it's because they think it's whatever's not East. Christian that they'll I see.
Yeah, like any like you talk about the East, they're like, oh, that's paganism. It's like no.
Gotcha.
First of all, we got some of our holidays from like Wiccan holidays. Gotcha. So
okay, well then good work, translator. So
and that's the thing, I don't think she really did too much research into Catholicism, because if you are not of the Catholic religion, if you have not been baptized in the church, you do not have access to getting special rites in the church, say getting married by a Catholic priest or having a funeral, which is what I don't understand. Like Marius was saying, the last time he ever came into the church was for his mother's funeral.
Yeah.
Which I guess his father pulled some strings to have his mother get her final rites at a Catholic church. But I mean, no priest in their right mind would do that just because they're of a different religion. And I would think if I'm like Muslim or Jewish, I would want to have those funeral rites done by, you know, a rabbi or whomever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And it definitely the author did not do a lot of research on Catholicism, or just kind of made it up as she went along or something, because especially for the amount of sexual encounters with priests that go on.
Well, she's not wrong on that.
That the priests sometimes initiate and sometimes, anyway, it's very strange. That was another annoying thing, because if you know anything about Christianity and Catholicism, you're just going to be like, why did you even choose? Why didn't you just make it a non-denominational boarding school?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, because that was weird. But that's essentially chapter one. It ends with Udon asking Marius, like, why do you like Ginger? Why not me? Why can't it be me? And then we go to chapter two.
And Marius and Ginger don't even end up together. They like,
oh no.
And they like are like, okay, this is the last time I'll see you, I guess. Okay, bye.
Essentially,
But it's not sad because you don't care about them. Like, they're not like likable, relatable characters, really. It's not like, oh no, they didn't end up together. It's like, okay, next chapter.
Yeah, but it goes back to, I think it was Rin in our last review who said, like, it's not necessarily a happy ending, but their issues are resolved in the end, which is exactly what happens. So chapter two, we meet Shiogurajiano. Everyone calls him Shio for short. My notes. I put, dude wakes up from dream and runs out of room. Cuts a couple in bed. He's 12.
Yeah. Oh, he's the one with stigmata, right?
Yeah, this is the stigmata story.
He was born with these markings that are like stigmata, and he has nightmares, and so somehow run into Juan, and then Juan is just like, fine, you can stay in my room and whatever, and then they just kind of progress from there. But
that's where it was confusing for me, because like that's how the second chapter starts out. I just had a what the hell moment, and then it cuts to Juan, who has black hair. He also comes from a Buddhist country. It's not clear if he is also Buddhist, but I think it's implied. And then we meet Emilio, who has blonde hair. He has the hots for the priest. We don't really get his name. I think we never get his name. He's just known as father.
Yeah. So I guess Juan is Emilio's servant.
Yeah.
And he gets to go to school there because he's tending to Emilio, who's from a prominent family, I guess. And, I guess Shio, usually when he has nightmares, he runs to the church.
Yeah, that's explained later.
But they're really not allowed to leave their dorms after lights out or something like that. And so he keeps getting in trouble.
Shio does run into Juan. That's what it says. Like, Juan's helping Emilio out in his bedroom, like getting him ready for bed.
And sometimes
they were sleeping together.
Yeah,
too,
sometimes Emilio has sex with Juan, who I guess just sort of tolerates it. But
yeah,
it didn't seem like it was forced or anything. But
he's getting paid.
They're not romantically involved at all. It's more of a convenience thing, I guess.
Yeah, like, it feels good, so yeah. we'll just go with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, Juan runs into Shio, and then we find out later that Shio's going to the father to, I guess, decompress, tell him about his dreams, which are never really explained. Like, it's never explained what gave him stigmata. I thought, I was really hoping they'd go into it, because Shio has some issues with his mom. Like, I guess his mom dropped him off there. But I mean, if someone has stigmata, like, that's holy sign.
I think they said at the beginning of, he was very, I wonder sometimes if this scanlation that I read was, like, incomplete, like the scans they got didn't have all the pages or something, I don't know. But I think they kind of implied through like one panel that he was very sickly as a child, and they prayed that if anything would cure him or whatever like that, to cure him, and then he woke up and he was cured, but he had stigmata or something,
which is really random. Yeah. like I said,
like, yeah, of all the things from, you know, Catholic imagery that she could have brought in, yeah, of course immediately we have a character with stigmata, which is just so extra and not, I don't know, not well done, because they didn't really go anywhere with it.
Usually, like, if you have stigmata, that's like one of the miracles you need to become a saint. It makes no sense. And apparently Shio has these powers as well, so if anyone pisses him off, like a great example, Strauss, who's the prefecture, he scolds Shio
Strauss is the dorm prefect, kind of like the dormitory head,
yeah,
or something.
He's the one who makes sure everyone's
like the RA of the dorm.
So he gets after Shio for running out of his room, and Shio, I guess, is upset with him, and then something bad happens to Strauss. He just randomly faints in a stairwell and gets hurt. And that happens to anyone who makes Shio upset, like picks on him. So everyone just keeps their distance from Shio. They don't want to be friends with him for fear that they're just going to set him off.
Or he has like a couple worshippers sort of that are like, they think he's great, but
yeah,
but they're really not friends, and he doesn't want them to be friends with him because of that. And so, yeah, he's a little bit lonely.
Yeah. So this chapter continues on into chapter 3, where Shio essentially turns to Juan for comfort, because when he's by, he has his own dorm room because of the stigmata. He's essentially special, and really no one wants to hang out with him. So he finds that his nightmares go away when he sleeps with Juan in his room.
Just sleeping next to each other in the bed.
Nothing sexual just yet. So eventually Strauss and another dorm head confront him. And eventually, I think one of them gets hurt yet again.
Yeah.
And while this is going on, Emilio starts getting the hots for the priest and starts hitting on him. Like, he's getting the Eucharist, and he totally, like, sucks on his finger. Yeah. And I'm like, ew, why?
Emilio pursues the priest hard.
It's an interesting twist, because usually it's the priest that's going after someone else, which I thought was what was going to happen.
We get to later, the priest actually kind of did like Emilio from when he was like little, like when he was a first year or whatever. And he was like, I was fascinated by Emilio. So I think the priest did have indecent intentions, and Emilio found out about it or something. But we'll get to that later.
Yeah. So chapter 3 ends with Juan raping Shio in his dorm room. Like, here's the thing. This is what got me. Juan shares a room with two other people, I think, because initially Juan did not want Shio to be in his room. But his friends were like, no, you need to do it. Like, something bad's going to happen to you if you don't.
Oh, yeah. And us. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, there's one night Shio's upset. I think he was upset that Strauss and this other guy got hurt. So he goes to Juan's room, and as soon as he walks in the door, Juan just, like, starts groping him. And let's not forget, he's, like, 12 or something.
He's in ninth grade.
It mentioned his age. That's why I wrote down 12. Oh, okay. So, or either it said I knew about this place when I was 12, but I swear he must be 12. Either way, it's creepy, and I do not approve. I'm wondering, like, when we come to moments like these in a yaoi manga, if this is the part where some people are trying to equate yaoi with pedophilia.
I don't know. This definitely had some very shota-y moments in this different chapters. This one being one. Another one later is way worse. I don't know. I think Shio's more like a ninth grader or a tenth grader. Not a senior, but maybe like a freshman or a sophomore. Still too young, but not as bad as one of the ones later. Not necessarily Boku no Pico yet.
No.
But yeah, I didn't like that. I mean, they're both underage, but it's still... One of them is the older one, and the younger one didn't ask for it.
Shio said stop.
Yeah, that happens a lot of times in this.
Yeah,
we're going to be a little bit broken recordy probably toward the end here. Yeah,
So then we move on to chapter 4. Shio ends up walking in on Emilio and the priest. And by this point, like at first, when Emilio came onto the priest was saying no. Mm-hmm. And he was crying. He didn't like it. And then when he walks in on them this time, the priest seems upset. Like he doesn't want this.
Mm-hmm.
But then we find out later, like they have a flashback moment where the priest says he did want it.
Yeah,
which was very weird. Like, his body language did not say that.
I guess he's conflicted because he's a priest and because the other guy's a kid, maybe, but in his perverted heart, he wants it. So then they're both embarrassed. And so Emilio gets mad and mm-hmm. is like, you ruined my chances. So he is mean to Shio and tells him to stay away from Juan, I guess.
Yeah, that's essentially what he said. Like, something like he's out of your league, I think?
Something like that.
And then, yeah, he spooked him real good, though. Because, like, Shio was avoiding him, and then Juan became worried, like, oh, was it because, like, I came onto him too strong? Is that why?
Yeah. And then later, I think Shio goes to him, and he's like, the priest, and he's like, Shio, you never come to me anymore. Sit on my lap. And I was like, oh my god, this is so creepy.
I know! He asked him to sit on his lap. So I'm like, stop.
Maybe it's more accurate than we think it is. However, and so then it turns out that I guess all the bad things that were happening to people that made Shio upset were happening by one of his like follower people that was just going around and like hurting people because he wanted
that.
At the very last part of it, he wanted to kill Shio and like drink his blood because it thought he would make him a god. It was just a crazy guy.
I thought that was one of the dorm head's friends who wanted to get revenge on Shio.
No, I think that was a kid who was just kind of crazy who had been following Shio.
There's no names. Yeah. Everyone kind of looks the same.
Yeah, we don't know what the name of this guy is, I don't think. It's the plot is always shaky.
Yeah, so the story with Shio, that ends in Volume 2, Chapter 1, where the priest, while he enjoys being with Emilio, he eventually leaves the school, and he tells Emilio to come find him, like, mm-hmm. once he graduates. And, of course, Juan rapes Shio again before the story is even over. Oh, I know, Beppe, it's wrong. It's so wrong.
Yeah, and I think Shio goes to ask the priest, like, we're two guys, is that okay? And the priest is like, well, it's not up to me, you know, or what. Anyway, it wasn't the normal priestly advice he would give, probably. But anyway, Juan and Shio, I guess, end up being boyfriends.
It wasn't too clear because we never see Shio again, but we like Juan and Emilio come up again later
on. Well, I think, okay, when the priest tells Emilio he's leaving and come back find me later, because he's leaving the priesthood too, I think, even though he didn't say that, but then he's not wearing his collar anymore.
Yeah.
He's wearing like a suit or whatever.
Well, he doesn't have to wear it all the time.
Right. But I think he's leaving, hopefully he's leaving the priesthood because he's a pervert, but, and clearly not a very godly person because the mm-hmm. religion itself doesn't really come in at all. Only the cliquishness of the Catholic people versus the non-Catholic people. But anyway, Shio's there like being mad at Emilio for making the priest go away because he liked to confide in the priest, I guess, mm-hmm. or something like that. But that was just in the little like chibi drawings. And so it's hard to tell who it is,
but
except
I mean,
that he's the only one that has like lightly toned hair, not black, not blonde kind of.
Yeah. But I mean, by then he didn't really need it anymore.
Yeah.
But here's something else that confused me in this story. Everyone was saying Shio is selfish. They were calling him out saying he was selfish for some reason. And I'm like,
what was that about?
Where the hell did that come from? Is it because of his powers? Like he was being selfish with them or something? It wasn't clear. But for some weird reason, before the story's over, I don't remember who. I think it was Emilio and some of his friends. They were saying Shio is just being selfish and that he needs to be kinder to Juan or something. It was something. I don't know why.
I don't know. Sometimes when things don't make sense or have a kind of a bad story, I wonder if it's because the translation that I'm reading is spotty or if it had to be translated through another language like Chinese or something first, mm-hmm. and that always puts another element of what's going on in there. But in this case, I actually think the story's just not that good.
Yeah. Okay, but I will say, I did like the ship between the priest and Emilio. Because
really?
It was an interesting twist that I didn't see coming. And honestly, for me, Emilio had the short hair. So I'm a huge fan of Starfighter, first of all. Mm-hmm. And to me, Amelia, with that glorious curly hair, it reminded me of Phoebus. And then the priest had, like, very short hair with glasses. And I'm like, oh my god, it's Cook! And it's like, oh,
I see what you're saying.
Phoebus and Cook in another life.
Yeah. Well, I was very creeped out by the priest.
Oh, so, yeah. No, the priest,
I didn't like them at all.
The priest, whenever he was around Shio, like, that was creepy as hell. But,
yeah.
I didn't like that aspect. But, like, it's wrong, but... I liked it because it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why I like the ship.
Yeah.
But I have more of favorite ships that top that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, Volume 2, Chapter 2, we meet two new characters. There's Basil, who wears glasses, and Guerlain, who's 2 years younger than him. So, Basil is returning home, and he's set to marry some woman, some random woman his parents have set him up with, and then he's going to take over the family company. And Guerlain is a friend in the dormitory. He's not necessarily his roommate, but anyway,
Basil is graduating and leaving, and I think the other guy is a year behind him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he convinces him to spend 1 week with him before he leaves. And while they spend this week together, they eventually fall in love. And actually, this one was kind of cute.
This one, yes, was
It had some random characteristics, though, like, for Basil. Like, his room was... You know Howl's Moving Castle, how you walk room?
Yes.
It has plants hanging around. There's trash and random junk all over the place.
That's a really good analogy. Yeah, like, he's...
That's him.
So you don't know why, he just seems to be, like, really eclectic, and, like, he has this collection of, like, candy wrappers, and...
Yeah, what?
And, like, this...
That was gonna be explained, but no.
No, he just likes them because they're cute, and he has all these pens that don't work, but some of them do, and so he says it's like Russian roulette. Like, you pick one out, if it doesn't work, it's fate, or something like that. And so, anyway... And at first he said, I want you to date me for this last week. He's like, no, I don't want to do that. And then he's like, well, okay, well, just stay with me. We don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
And it turns out, and it's because he's having to go home to this really strict house where he's not going to have any, like, freedom to do anything. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to live this last week with all of his, like, things that he's collected and things that he likes and doing. And, like, he's just really, like, zany. And, like, he's like, let's go fishing. He's like, you know, we're not allowed to fish, right?
Yeah.
But they do anyway, and then they get scolded. And so it's kind of sweet and just... And random, kind of like Howl and Sophie
I felt it was like a bachelor party before the wedding. Like, you do all the crazy shit and then you get married.
Yeah.
So that's essentially what it is. But it was kind of tame. Like, it's not like they had, like, a lot of sex because Guerlain doesn't... He's not really into him that much. Mm-hmm. They definitely start out as friends. I think Basil wanted him to kiss him at some points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did. He propositioned him for a kiss.
And then he was like, okay, I was actually just kidding. But then in the end, they sort of did.
I think they did sleep together, too.
Just the very end.
Yeah.
On the last day after they had packed, I think.
Yeah.
His stuff. Which he had to just throw away all the stuff. He's like, I can't bring it back with me, so.
So it was very cute. I like when you mentioned the pens.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first I didn't understand, but the way you explained it, he said, if you don't get one that works, then, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just fate.
Yeah.
And essentially, like, that is their relationship. Yeah. It's fate that they met, but mm-hmm. it's ultimately not going to work.
Yeah. So. And so it's kind of fate at the end because he says, tell me how to contact you. He goes, okay, I have a pen and I have one candy wrapper left. So he writes his number down and he gives it to the guy and there's nothing on it because he had picked a pen that didn't work. So it's not meant to be, I guess, is the message there.
Yeah.
So they end up not together. And there's no, like, afterward where they get together or anything like that. So that one ends, you know,
bittersweet.
With them apart. But that was probably the sweetest one.
I know. There could have been, like, an entire manga series for that one. Yeah. I would have enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was a good for a one-shot.
Yeah, I think that was, like, the cleanest one in here. There was no rape or anything.
Yeah.
So.
No, that was the best one, for sure.
It really was. All right, so now we move on to chapter 3.
Mm.
We meet Lancelot. He's a brunette. And I wrote down, he looks like Asami from Viewfinder, younger version.
Yeah, he's like this old, like, tall, dark, and handsome kind of guy. Very prideful.
Whatever. Yeah, yet again, he's like another heir to a big company.
Lancelot Meredith is his name, or something like that.
And then we meet his blonde servant, Edda, who also is Shota material.
Okay, now he really is like Pico from Boku no Pico.
Oh, yeah.
No, this one is really Shota. I would say.
It is. It was, gave me all the wrong feelings. Like, just, ugh. Anyways, Lancelot, because he's higher up in the, I guess, the social ladder, He's familiar with Emilio, but he's very familiar with Emilio's sexual ways and how devious he can be. So
he doesn't really like Emilio.
Yeah.
He's like, I wouldn't sleep with my servant like you, who abuses his power to sleep with servants and, you know, and all this stuff.
Yeah, so he's
which he immediately turns around and does.
Exactly. So, but before that, he's like very protective of Eta or Eta, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But apparently, it sounds to me like at first, like when we're introduced to them, it sounds like they only knew each other for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. But then as you're reading, it's explained that Lancelot was going out shopping with his servant and he found this little boy abandoned on the side of the street. Mm-hmm. So he takes Eta in and makes him his servant. And when he was enrolled to the academy, Eta joined him, essentially.
Yeah, but I think that really was still just a short time later. Like, I think when he found him, he was already, like,
he seemed young. He seemed much younger.
He's very small. Very small.
And at the time, like, in the flashback that we're given, Lancelot also looked a lot younger. He wasn't as like, prideful or perfect. He seemed more relaxed and childish a bit. Because he's like, look, Eta, this is where we're going to go. My daddy went here and stuff.
Yeah, so. Well, Etta's dad also went there, but then he died, and I guess he was...
Yeah, orphaned. That's never explained.
He was, I guess, orphaned randomly, and that's when Lancelot found him, is like...
Yeah, I almost forgot about that, because we never touch on it again.
No, it's a lot happens in a very short number of pages, and then just is sort of ignored.
Yeah,
it's of the time.
And I thought that was going to be like an interesting twist that Eta was like once a part of a powerful family, and that's why Lancelot recognized him on the street.
Yeah,
rather than just feel like, oh, it's an abandoned little puppy, I want to take him home.
Yeah, but that's basically what it is.
Yeah, so disappointment. So much disappointment. Anyways, as the story is going on, Lancelot comes on to Eta. He kisses him repeatedly, and then he rapes him, and I swear they pull a scene right out of Okanaganai, and he just tosses money at him like, I'm sorry I slept with you.
It's like, this is condolence money. Or
exactly.
Something
stupid. I was like, no, no, no.
No.
So wrong. But anyways, after he sleeps with Eta, Lancelot, he's trying to talk himself out of not having feelings for him. He's saying he's male, he's my servant, this is just indecent, and he was trying to put the blame essentially on Eta for being too cute and like he can't control himself. But
the problems he has with it, male and being a servant, he doesn't mention how much younger he is also.
Yeah, it's like, stupid. No, Etta's not the problem. Yeah. It's not the fact that he's male, he's your servant, or that you think it's indecent. You're the problem, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
You're the one who's being a pedophile.
Yeah. I mean, yes, definitely. I mean, even though he's probably like 17 or 18, like, you can be an 18-year-old pedophile, and you are, dude. Like,
yeah.
Get over it.
But yeah, so...
Accept it and lock yourself away or something, because...
Please.
But instead, he goes back and is like, okay, actually, let's just do this.
Right. Yeah, so this story ends, really, with Emilio putting Viagra in Etta's food. Because after Lancelot sleeps with Eta, he and Emilio trade servants to essentially, I guess, give Eta a break, because Lancelot was really tough on him. Like, Eta's still a child, and he doesn't talk properly like a servant.
He doesn't know how to be a servant. He's still in training.
Yeah, he doesn't know how to use, like,
Kago or stuff, but yeah.
Yeah.
When he asks him a question, the response is supposed to be short and to the point, and he's always talk. He's like, what did it? Remember, you're supposed to respond concisely and all this stuff.
Yeah, use proper grammar. That's what I was trying to think. Like, be proper, use respectful terms. He needed a breather. That's why he went to go hang out with Emilio. But Emilio, for whatever reason, at first I thought this was a trick.
I wanted his first time to be good, so I put Viagra in his food.
And I thought this was a trick. Like, I thought Emilio did it on purpose to get both of them together.
Yeah,
like, you know... Oh no, he's horny. I can't come on to him, but you know, you should take care of him.
Yeah, so then
now's
your
chance.
He goes and tells Lancelot. He's like, oh, now he's all horny and stuff. So Lancelot
immediately
runs over there.
But it wasn't a trick. Emilio was just being a sick little shit and put the Viagra in his food for his own devices.
Yes.
So Emilio comes in and tells Juan that Eta scratched him or punched him or whatever.
Yeah.
Because there again, Eta did not want to have sex with him. So you know how it ends. It's I don't want to call this a yaoi because
it's
because
Morshoda.
Yeah, Lancelot comes over and takes care of the situation. But okay, I looked up, I googled Viagra, how it works. It doesn't just make you horny. Like, you gotta meet the medication halfway. Because Etta's so young and so small, depending on how much was put in there, maybe it'll have a strong effect. But if you are under stress, if you're like anxious, if you don't feel horny, you're technically not supposed to get an erection. It's like, the best example I can give is like, if I take 2 pills of melatonin to help me go to sleep and I go for a jog, I'm not just going to fall down and pass out and go to sleep.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause my heart's going, I'm active. I'm not meeting the medication halfway.
Yeah.
Viagra is for people that have erectile dysfunction for whatever reason, even if they can like try to make themselves horny, for whatever reason, there's just not enough blood flow to get their dick up.
Yeah.
So there again, they need to put themselves in a sexy situation for that medication to work properly.
Hopefully they just mistranslated it. It's supposed to be just an aphrodisiac.
Because, yeah, that would have been a better explanation, an aphrodisiac.
Yeah. Anyway,
it was wrong. But anyways, the story with Etta and Lancelot,
Shota.
It ends happily for Shota. And that's when we move on to volume 3, chapter 1. We meet Yoin and Kishi.
Oh, okay, yeah. So this is the guy, father,
the dancing thing.
His father is, the student's father is a ballroom dance instructor, and this teacher has to go to a ball, and he wants to learn how to dance, because he learned a long time ago, and he's forgotten how, and knows he was never good at it. And so the student is like, okay, well, the fee is going to be a kiss. I get to kiss on the lips every time, or something like
that.
Yeah,
like pretty much every day.
He loves this teacher. Or he's
Kishi Sensei.
He's enamored with Kishi Sensei. So it's one of those kind of misunderstanding stories where this lady comes to the school and is talking with the teacher, and he's like, oh, that's the lady he's dating. And he gets really jealous. But it turns out
that's his, like, stepmother.
It's going to be his stepmom. His dad's, his elderly father, the teacher's elderly father, is marrying a young woman. And so
it's a short and simple and cute story. I like that one because it was clean.
Yeah. And if you're okay with student pursues teacher and then they get together, then you'll like it. If you don't like student teacher things, you will not like it.
Yeah. So that one's pretty short.
But otherwise, it is very vanilla.
Oh, yeah.
And sweet.
Oh, yeah. Then we meet. Yeah, I had no complaints over that one. I don't think anyone did. So
the next one was better too.
Yes,
compared to others.
We meet in chapter 2. We meet Jose. He has black curly hair, and then Ernest. He has straight hair. He has a sister named Eleanor. So in this one, Jose is meant to marry Eleanor, but he has a crush on Ernest. And years ago, when they were kids, he confessed his love to him, and Ernest seemed to be okay with that. He even had a crush prior to this.
They had
love
like
confession.
Made out before one time.
Yeah, when they were kids. Like,
but then Jose got kind of weirded out and pushed him away because he was confused. But really, he wasn't he was into it.
Yeah, so it was child on child sexual assault, which is what it is technically termed. Again, it was right out of Boku no Pico, like episode 2.
Yeah. Childish experimentation up in the attic or something like that.
But it
mostly
was in the
they're
attic.
Making out. Yeah. They're making out, and then Ernest like touches him, his private area, and he pushes him away. And so then
he was startled. It wasn't that he didn't want it, but Ernest took it that way.
Yeah. So
And on that same day, that's when Jose found out that he was gonna marry Eleanor. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe that's why Ernest came on to him. Because he knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. So
who does that to kids? Like telling them you're going to marry this person?
But they're probably like in middle school, like sixth grade or something like that.
Yeah.
So then they go to the school, and Jose confesses to Ernest, and Ernest says, but what will my sister think? And so then he's really sad. Jose is really sad. But I guess it turned out that Ernest, he really was just trying to think of his sister's feelings, even though he really would have wanted to.
He was,
Jose.
Because he knew Eleanor really liked Jose, but Jose
has always only had eyes for Ernest.
Yeah, and he juggles this around a lot. He wants to break up with Eleanor, but because he knows that Ernest cares and loves his sister so much, he doesn't want to break up with her because if her heart is broken, that's just going to hurt Ernest's feelings. But eventually, they do break up. He kind of has enough with the charade. He breaks up with Eleanor, and it's not a huge surprise to Eleanor. She's like, I knew it. Yeah. But she's still crying and upset.
It's over my brother, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, girl, then why are you coming onto him so strong? Yeah. Like, gosh. Yeah,
very strong.
After that, Jose and Ernest do sleep together, and then Ernest receives a letter from his mom, and the story ends.
So it just ends right there.
I know. It's like, well, I want to know the drama with your mom. Yeah, like,
presumably they're still together, but happily, maybe? I don't know.
Question mark? Who knows? Yeah. So,
yes.
I like that one. I think that was, like, my favorite one, like, out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a good one. And then chapter 3. This one was really short. Like, I have one sentence to describe it. We meet Anselm. I wanted to say Ansem from Kingdom Hearts so much, but it's Anselm. He's a guy with glasses, and he has a crush on Etta, question mark?
He's, like, friends with Etta and kind of watches over him a little bit, because Etta gets bullied because he's a servant, and...
Yeah.
It was just, like, a couple pages long. It was short and didn't really have a point.
Yeah, I don't know why it was in there. I think it was just like, it's like a fanfic where you're following a minor character and you're hearing his thoughts as he watches the main story unfold. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get to hear his thoughts. That is essentially what this chapter was about.
Yeah, pretty much. This whole thing is kind of like the author just playing around with different motifs and themes and relationships and just like an experiment.
But this chapter should have been cut. There was no beginning, middle, and end, okay?
That's true. Yeah. But this whole thing is kind of feels disjointed. I think, I don't know. Yeah. I guess it's because she was just sort of just letting her imagination run and just doing all sorts of different things with different couples.
Where was the editor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it was probably running in a magazine as a series of one-shots that all based in the same place, kind of. And
there were Daojinshis in here, but I skipped over them because most of the time they're just PWP, so why even talk about it?
Yeah, she loves to do that.
Yeah. So moving on to chapter 4, we meet Father Noah. He looks like Fujiwara from Sex Pistols, but with, I think Fujiwara wore glasses? I don't remember. But he looks like him, but with his hair parted.
Yeah, parted. Or no,
was his hair parted? I'm getting them confused, but he looks like he's from Sex Pistols. And then we meet Dally. He has long blonde hair. We also meet Mark Nelly, who is Noah's older teacher. And Father Noah, like, adores this man.
Oh, I think Dolly is supposed to be, I don't know why this happened, but I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be Strauss, the dorm head that fell down the stairs in the beginning. I don't know why it said Dolly, but he looked like Strauss. He was with Ginger and they were the dorm people. Anyway, it's supposed to be Strauss making a cameo, but for some reason it's Dolly. Maybe that's his first name. I don't know.
I guess. I didn't catch that because I don't
know. Once again, SMH, just okay, whatever.
It's all over the place, guys. It's so bad. Yeah, but sometimes, like, even with Lancelot, like, I forgot his last name, but, like, in the manga, I think they kept doing his last name.
Yeah, sometimes.
They switch between the two, so.
The last volume does that a lot, too.
Oh, yeah. I was like, stop.
The one guy's last name, but then he refers to him by his company's name, and then, but it's also sort of his last name. Yeah, oh, that one was bad. We'll get there.
I kind of like that one, too. But anyways, final character we meet in Chapter 4 is Raphael. Again, he looks like he's from Sex Pistols. He has curly blonde, like, it looked bleach blondish hair. And he bumps into Noah outside as he's arriving. He's the one who's using the cell phone. Yeah, he's the one who has a cell phone. Again, it looked like he looks like Shido from Sex Pistols. Because of the hair and the eyes. Like, they're not the black eyes. They're white eyes.
Yes, the other light.
Yeah, so I was like, this is Sex Pistols, but in another life. So Raphael notices that Father Noah has some feelings for Sensei Mark Nelly, and he says that he won't tell anyone if Father Noah becomes his lover.
And I guess he's kind of joking, and actually Father Noah does push him away. And
I thought he was serious. Like, he was totally up in his face. Well, I didn't take that.
Maybe he was serious, but Noah was like, no, leave. And he does. So that was a change from previous ones where he would have just pushed him down. And then he goes into Noah's first class that he's teaching, which is philosophy, because he knows that the kids are going to make, like, try to pull something
out. They're going to, like, run him over.
Yeah. And so he does that, and Noah stands up for himself again. But he also runs out of the class, like, crying, which is, he's like, oh, I'm so unprofessional, which he is.
And then pretty much, like, right after that, Raphael essentially gives him a hand job, but I couldn't tell if it, I think it was right because he was saying no.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say because the priest, this new priest certainly seems open to having having yeah. sex with the students.
Because apparently he used to date others in the past, but it never lasted. And there's a part of him that still wants to have a relationship with someone. And I guess that someone was his teacher, but he knew it would never work out.
He had boyfriends, I guess, that were classmates in the past, and they all always broke it off because they said he was sort of too clingy or something like that, or he was pressuring them, and so...
He's anyway, not confident, and I guess that's why he's... Yeah.
And so he graduated, I think they said 6 years ago, so he's at least 6 years older than the oldest kid there. So then there's another age difference thing, but he's very immature, like childish.
Oh, yeah, which was kind of surprising. Like, he's a father? What?
Yeah, he's supposedly a priest father thing. And so, anyway, but he's like, he wants to have a boyfriend while he's there, basically. He went back with the expectation that he was going to get a boyfriend again. That's not how any of this works.
No. Yeah, I don't recall if Father Noah and Raphael got together in the end.
Like, I think they kind of do.
I didn't note it down. I think they danced around it a bit because there again, Noah's trying to be a good priest and be celibate, but he's also
he's trying very hard to be celibate.
Yeah, he's certainly not trying. He's letting it all happen.
He wants a boyfriend.
Yeah. So it's a happy-ish ending. I also note that Ernest and Jose pop up at the end, but they add nothing to the plot.
Yeah. Yeah, this is another one that's sort of unresolved.
But it has a happy-ish ending.
All right, well, volume four is kind of all one story.
Yeah, which I was happy for. But there again, like, with this one, we didn't... The names were hard to catch.
Okay, yeah, so I'll go over the characters. Okay, so Sasha Melbank, whose father is the head of some prominent company.
We never know.
And then there's this guy, his name's Ayato. I don't know if his name is like, it's Moriyama or something like that, but the company is often referred to as Forest, so he calls him Forest because that's the name of his company. And they spell it Forest like Forest, the KKK leader guy, the white supremacist Forest.
Seriously?
Not F-O-R-E-S, F-O-R-R-E-S-T. And so, anyway, that was a weird choice. But I don't think they would have spelled it that way unless it was written in, like, English somewhere or in Romaji somewhere.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but I think his last name is actually, like, Morishige or Moriyama, something like that.
That's right. They did bring that up a couple
Morishige,
of times.
Morishige, I think.
Yeah.
But he calls him Forrest because that's his Forrest's father used to work for the Melbank company. And then he, like, worked his way up the ranks and then split off and formed his own rival company.
Yeah, and he pulled some, like...
And took a bunch of employees
with him. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, Sasha hates him because his dad was a backstabber and betrayed his father and all this stuff. And so he just bullies him mercilessly. And Sasha's servant is named Cole. Sasha bullies Forrest a lot.
We don't see
bad.
It.
It's happened in the past.
Yeah, that we see it in... Actually, I don't even think we see it. It's just mentioned like, oh my God, this is all the torment I put him through.
Yeah, it's been going on for a couple of years, I guess. And he had friends that joined in on the bullying, I suppose.
Yeah, so apparently like the Melbank company is still like the number one company there.
Mm-hmm.
His dad put a whole bunch of money towards a tea room / party room because he wanted his son
at the school
to get used to like being in those situations and talking with people and stuff. So... That was like the Melbank tea room, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But in this first chapter, the Forest Company acquires the Melbank Company.
And unlike when one company buys another, like one company sells to another company or whatever, where the person who sold ends up with a bunch of money and better off, somehow they ruin the Melbank family.
I guess they like bought it and then like, so maybe
they bought it, but the people didn't receive any money, I guess, because usually when you sell your company, like you get a big payoff or something like that. But somehow this takes over the other company and leaves Forrest takes over Melbank, and the Melbank family becomes destitute overnight.
Yeah, which is incredible.
But anyway, that's how it works. Apparently,
Sasha can no longer stay at the school unless he becomes Forrest's servant. And he hears this from his own servant, I think, too.
Well, one of his friends is like, I heard that the Forest Company is taking
over
the Melbank.
Speaking of this friend, who is he? What is his name?
He comes up multiple times, and I still don't think we ever learn his name.
I feel like if I remember, he's like a redhead. He's just an asshole.
Yeah, he is.
Because he's like one of those close friends of Melbank, and he's the one who's helping him bully Forrest.
Yeah, he's a pot stirrer, is what he
is. Oh, yeah, definitely. So apparently on the side, he was kind of buddy-buddy with Forrest, and Forrest lets him know ahead of time that he is going to take down the Melbank company. And mm-hmm. he's like, you know, you can watch me just destroy Sasha.
Yeah.
And he's the one who goes up to Sasha and says, hey, man, I heard this rumor that something's going to happen to your company, or it's already happened. And it all goes downhill from there for Sasha.
Yeah.
So that's what leads us into chapter two.
So Forrest is like, Sasha, you can be my slave and my servant, and you can still stay here. And he's like, no, I'm never going to do that.
Yeah.
So now chapter two.
So during the day, Cole will still work for Sasha. He'll appear as his servant, but he's technically not working for Sasha anymore.
Mm-hmm. He was part of the buyout, apparently.
Apparently so. What the hell? But anyways, the Forrest ends up paying Cole to be his servant. So during the night, Cole can go home. He can chill. He doesn't really need to take care of Forrest too much, aside from getting his laundry and stuff. But Sasha has to do his own laundry. He has to learn to take care of himself. And Cole tries to guide him in the right direction, but it doesn't go over too well.
Yeah, one thing that's kind of weird is, so he's like, you can either be my servant or you have to withdraw from the school tomorrow. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then he continues going to school. So, like, what was that ultimatum about? Because he doesn't become his servant for, like, another chapter or something, but he's still somehow staying at the school, so...
I guess the paperwork had to go through?
You know, they kind of explained a little bit at the end... They mentioned something that seems like it would have come in way earlier, which is that
I know. There's like,
Cole says something like that they had I guess for Sasha had some money saved up, so he was paying his own way, but then he mm-hmm. kind of was running out of money, so he really had to take the generosity or whatever of Mori, Shige, Forrest.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, but they didn't explain that right then, because he's like, you have to leave tomorrow or you'd be my servant, and he doesn't either. And so I was just so what happened? Okay, so next chapter.
So as we said, Sasha becomes his servant. He spills milk or something on him at
one
point.
Oh, no, I think the shit stirrer guy spills milk on Forrest. And then Sasha's like, oh,
that's right.
That wasn't me. I did not ask him to do that. Like, I promise.
Yeah.
And
he gets groped for that. Like, Forrest starts abusing his power to essentially just screw with him. And it gets worse because, again, this...
The milk spiller guy.
Yeah, the jackass redhead.
Yeah, he takes some scissors and cuts Forrest's
the next day jacket. Because he's like, wasn't your suit ruined yesterday? Oh, well, you know, this one's going to be ruined too. And he cuts the
lapel, I guess.
Something sort of. On. I don't
but
know.
I guess he puts a deep enough cut in it that it can't be fixed. Who and these
fabric
uniforms,
scissors.
I know. These uniforms are so elaborate and expensive that I guess they each only have like one at a time. Two at a time, and so then
I thought they had more than one. But
anyway, so that apparently him destroying his uniform again was just a huge blow to his very big insult.
So that night, in addition to raping him, I think he definitely comes on him too strong. Like, he sexually assaults him. He gets a whip and he starts
like a riding crop.
Yeah. Who the fuck has that in their dorm?
Yep. They don't even mention horses in this whole manga, so I don't know why.
Still, you shouldn't be using that on a horse either way.
Yeah.
But, he ends up whipping him. And then chapter three, Sasha has a fever from being whipped.
Yeah.
He's, like, really sick. And I was just like, what?
Maybe he got an infection?
Sick.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can buy the infection part.
Yeah.
But anyway, Cole gets pissed off that Forrest did this to Sasha, but then he immediately turns around and starts victim shaming Sasha because he's like, well, this wouldn't have been so extreme if you had just been a good servant. This wouldn't have happened to you. And I guess out of pride, Sasha doesn't want to say that he was sexually assaulted and raped. So he doesn't tell Cole the whole story and he just takes it. And I'm so mad.
Yeah. And then Forrest is like, oh, I regret it so much. It's like, if you regretted it so much, you would never have done that.
Yeah,
like,
if you were a nice person, you wouldn't have done this.
That's bad writing. That's what that
was. It's so bad. But Forrest goes on to claim that he owns Sasha and he refuses to let him leave because by this point, Sasha has had it. He's like, he's pretty like, much
I'm gonna resign. Yeah.
Yeah, but then he says, no, I bought you, I own you. Now, out of, despite my graciousness, like, to pay for you to be here, you're gonna have to pay me back now, so you have to stay.
Yeah, Okanaganai, another Okanaganai reference.
Yeah, and apparently, by this the end of this chapter, we find out that Forrest is hiding a far worse secret. Which leads us into chapter 2.
It's like, is there anything
worse? Oh, I'm sorry, than chapter 4.
I was like, is there anything worse than what you had done already? Like, that he could hate you like, more? Like,
he tries to redeem himself by healing the wounds, and it's like, no, you're just a freaking jackass. Yeah. Like, even for a moment there, Sasha was falling for it. Like, oh, that's so sweet. He watched over me. He must be kind. Like, there must be some kindness in him. No, don't fall for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But chapter 4, it's like, it's calmed down. Sasha is trying to live up to Cole's standards of taking care of Forrest, like doing the laundry, but he keeps messing up. So in this chapter, it's mostly him and Cole butting heads. And Forrest is so kind to defend him and tell Cole to like ease up on him a little. He's had a very luxurious life. He's never really gotten his hands dirty. So because Forrest is coming to his defense, they end up bonding. And the chapter ends with someone screwing up Sasha's door with red paint.
Yeah, it goes from Forrest beating him savagely and raping him to Forrest babying him and, like, spoiling him all the time and, like, letting him eat cookies and, like, being too easy on him. And then Cole gets mad because he's not being hard enough on him. And it's like, when did this, why did this 180 happen?
Exactly. It was so bad. Like,
yeah, this...
And you know what, the whole door thing, I still don't know what it means, but like when it happens, like it's supposed to mean something bad is going to happen to that person.
Yeah.
Because Sasha essentially did the same thing to Forrest like earlier,
right,
a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's bullying stuff.
But
it wasn't really a threat, but it was bullying. And
from my understanding, it's a threat of something because like, oh, the door, it's red. That means it's a sign.
Yeah. Oh, I thought... Okay, the way that was happening, Cole, I think, had left first. And I thought it was Cole's door, because it was like, what happened to Cole?
Oh, no,
and
it was Sasha's door.
I thought at first that something happened to Cole and it was blood on the door, like somebody had killed Cole or something like that. And so then we went into the next chapter and it was just red paint and it was on Sasha's door. And so Sasha skips class the next day because he gets tired of washing it off and oversleeps or something like that.
Well, why is that his job? Where is the custodian?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Oh, hey, we find out the guy's name. Okay.
Oh.
Chapter 5, we finally find out who that asshole is. It's Fred. His name is Fred.
Fred.
Apparently, he's a blonde with curly hair. He's Forrest's accomplice. And he also wanted to ruin Sasha for...
They never explain what that...
They never explain why.
He was the person who told Sasha that he should be bullying Forrest, and like, in the beginning.
Yeah.
And so then... And then later, I don't know, I guess he just likes being a... creator of chaos or something. He's like the Joker. He's like, whatever.
Chaotic bad, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so then, I guess, when he thinks Forrest is not being hard enough on Sasha, because he doesn't know that the Sasha got whipped and raped and stuff.
Yeah, and I don't think he knows that Sasha is now Forrest's servant. Like, it's only at night that he seems to be helping him out, but...
Yeah, because I guess Forrest's secret was that he told Fred, hey, you can watch me, like, rip this guy to shreds and, like,
but he
take him down
it.
A million pegs, and then Fred's like, what happened to doing that? Like, you said you were going to ruin him, and now you're just babying him all the time, and... Because he doesn't... I mean, if he knew he'd been whipped and stuff, he might not have thought that, but... So then Fred is the one who threw the paint on the door and all this stuff, and...
So, from my understanding of it, Fred essentially finds out that the two of them are in a relationship, because... He's the one who tells Sasha in that chapter, like, there's a romantic moment between Sasha and Forrest, and they essentially confess their love for each other. And right after that, that's when Fred tells Sasha that, you know, he and Forrest were in cahoots against him. Mm-hmm. So that's like a blow to their relationship.
Yeah, that was another unrealistic thing, is Sasha has hated Forrest this whole time.
Yeah.
And apparently, even though he was bullying Forrest the whole time, Forrest kind of liked Sasha all along.
Yeah, that was never explained.
Like, no, like, that wouldn't have happened. And then Sasha, like, immediately goes from hating him and also being sort of his slave and still hating him to liking him in the matter of a couple pages of nothing really happening. It's not like he saved his life or something like that.
So at the beginning of the volume, it opens up with both of them as children. And from my understanding, they've been childhood friends, though we never see it. And just one day, Sasha comes in, he's kind of crying in anger, and he's like, you know, your dad's a bad man, like, you're the son of this asshole, essentially. So that's where things fall down between them, because he finds out who this Forrest kid is. And I guess at the time, perhaps, Forrest had a crush on Sasha. It's not clear, but for whatever reason, Forrest just likes Sasha, but he also wants to get revenge on him, which makes no sense.
No.
Yeah, so anyway, chapter 6, Sasha informs Cole about everything, the way he has treated Sasha. So Cole gets pissed off with Forrest. Forrest gets pissed off and confronts Fred for spilling the beans. And he punches him. He gets suspended. He's forced to leave. And before he leaves, he gives his checkbook to Sasha and Cole so they can remain at the school without him. And Sasha essentially chases after him because he likes him. For whatever screwed up reason.
And then there's an extra.
Yeah, chapter 6.5. It's like they both graduated. They're in some hotel. Sasha goes to visit.
Yeah, he's on the way. We don't even get. Why did I write Cole? Yeah, Sasha goes to visit Forrest. Who he now calls Aya, which is his first name. And, but they don't get. It's just him on the way. He's on the train, and this old lady's like, "Something good must have happened." And he's like, "I'm going to see my lover." And
it's so I guess they're secret lovers, essentially, is what they are.
I don't know. It's
why not business partners? I mean, like, amend the family tragedy and become business partners. Yeah,
that would have been a little.
That would make more sense, because then you don't have to keep your relationship a secret too much. Yeah. Well, that romantic whatever it is, they live apart now.
But if they mended bridges, then they could live together. In the same town, because he's on the train to go see him. He must be not that close,
right?
It looked like a long distance train.
Exactly. It's a cute ending, I will admit that. Like, it's all the cute, fuzzy, warm feelings. But just the way their relationship starts out, I don't condone it. Like, stop that.
It was very problematic the whole way through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, goodness. So, we'll end it up with some questions. I haven't read this manga. This is, like, the first time I've read it. But have you read it in the past?
I did read it once a long time ago when I was reading all of Nekota Yonezo's stuff. I went and read this, I guess, and even though I didn't like it then, but I just forced myself to read the whole thing just to say it.
Forced yourself.
So that I could say I read it. And want it to get better, and it doesn't. It doesn't get better.
No.
But I didn't remember a whole lot of it, but I did remember there was a collection of short stories, and none of them are particularly memorable.
Exactly why I have notes, and why, Frida, no.
So I did remember that the first chapter had something to do with drugs. I remember drugs were involved, mm-hmm. but they're not doing drugs. It's just that drugs are being sold, and they're not used. I don't know. So it's a weird plot device that, anyway, I remember that.
Hey, stop that.
And when they got to the chapter with Stigmata, I remember there had been a character with Stigmata and there were priest things, but I didn't remember much of it.
That's why I have notes, and that's why I had trouble remembering stuff, mm-hmm. because it's a lot of characters thrown at you all at once. It's hard to remember them all. And while the stories are cute,
some of them,
they're just not that rememberable because, I mean, it's all kind of the same plot line, really. Like, there's problematic content between the characters, but in the end, like, mm-hmm. it's resolved. So, and I guess that's the mangaka's trademark.
So, as far as keeping my attention, I would say it was kind of I forced myself kind of to get to the end. And when they're one shots, it's easy to move on to the next one, because even if I didn't like the last one, the next one's going to be different.
It may be better. Even.
The last volume, or the whole volume, is that one story that I don't like.
It was drastically different. I compared
didn't
to the other
like
volumes.
The story, and it just kept going on and on and on.
So I wanted it to stop.
Yes, make it stop, please.
Yeah. So I think compared to like other mangas, this is like the first manga I've ever run into where it's a collection of short stories, and I think that's what makes this one stand out from any others.
Mm-hmm. Well, I read a lot of short story collections.
Oh, really?
I've read several mangaka that do a lot of like. like one-shot collections.
Yeah.
And I like those. I like it when they can wrap up in one chapter if it's good.
Because mm-hmm.
sometimes a one-chapter story can be really good and really right. like make a big impact on you. Or one or two chapters. Sometimes just two chapters. But not this one. I didn't feel that way about this one.
So in the end, would you ever reread it? Because for me, there's nothing really that draws me back to it,
mm-hmm.
to be honest. I don't think I'd yeah. reread it. Recommending it wise, maybe? If, like, you want something short, I mean, those are short, simple, mm-hmm. and sweet, but I'm hesitant to recommend it because there's definitely some Shota material in there that I don't think anyone would be comfortable with.
Yeah. So that's true.
That's a no.
Yeah, I think I've passed over it several times because I like Nekoto Yonezu's art style a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And some of her stories are really cute, and I like some better than others. And so sometimes I want to go back and reread some of her stuff, but I always pass over this one because I read it once,
oh.
and I didn't like it, and it's long. It's kind of unusual for a one-shot collection to span multiple volumes.
Oh, yeah.
But, so I usually... No, I wouldn't read it again, and for recommendations, geez, it's hard to say. If I knew somebody really, really had a thing for high schools set in a remote setting and or with elaborate, stupid uniforms like mm-hmm. these guys, these tailcoat uniforms, and liked sort of master-servant dynamics or Catholic imagery,
yeah,
but wouldn't be offended because it's so like messed up, like it's so inaccurate, I guess.
Yeah.
I might recommend it, but only if I knew that it would really suit someone's taste.
Right. Yeah. Honestly, I thought I would like it more because I was really excited to read it because I grew up in a Catholic school and I was like, oh yeah, the drama, let it begin.
No. If you're Catholic, no. I could see this making you very angry because it just gets so many things wrong.
Well, I wasn't too angry about that. I just kind of thought it gave me a chuckle, really.
Yeah.
But I felt like there could have been more drama around the religion itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of a half-assed tie-in.
Yeah.
There were just a few things that were tied in, but the religion itself, like you said, it was not really a plot point.
It was more like kind of there in the background, mm-hmm. but no one touched on it. So
yeah.
Yeah, so that's our review of In God's Arms.
I hope that I don't have to ever read it again.
Yeah. But I mean, if someone out there does want to read it, like totally support mm-hmm. this mangaka, like go out and buy it. Like I said, all volumes are out there.
Yeah. And for Yoneza Nekota's stuff, I would put this near the bottom of the list of like her best things, like, her other works that she has. So we talked about Hidoku Shinaide, Don't Be Cruel last time. That would mm-hmm. be more toward the top, even though I don't really like...
I didn't like that. I felt it was a lot like the very last volume where it was a very problematic relationship.
Yes.
And I did not approve.
But like plot-wise...
It was good.
It gets better. Yeah, plot-wise it's good and art-wise it's good. And that's some people's... The story itself is some people's thing and they like that.
Oh yeah, like the very last couple of volumes that I read, like especially with the mother and the father, like I am totally there for family drama.
Yes. So if you want other ones of hers that have high school stories, I love Electel Delusion. Electel Delusion is really great.
Yeah.
The only thing problematic is that they're both like high school aged. So you could say that they're underage. But otherwise it's this like lovey dovey comedic relationship that's really funny. And then another one that's kind of set in the same universe is Otona Keikenichi, I think it's called. This one guy, he's impotent, I guess. And then he like runs into this one boy at school that has some kind of pheromones or something. When he smells him, he like gets hard for the first time.
So is this like an Omegaverse thing?
Not really, but like he gets hard for like the first time ever. And so then they sort of begin a relationship and it can be kind of problematic, but it's not as bad as this one. And then, of course, there's Michiru Heia, which is a spinoff of this, but is much better.
That's what I overall. Heard from the reviews. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one long story that has tragic elements and, like, has mentions of rape and stuff in it. However, it's a much more put-together story
right.
than the whole of In God's Arms, even though it's a spinoff of In God's Arms.
And I meant to read it, too, for this one, but we've gone long on long enough, so.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So stay tuned for March. No, this one's going to come out in March. So April is when we're going to have Viewfinder come out. And then the following month, we'll talk about the OVA and the musical. So yeah, I'm excited for that. Stay tuned.
We had good comments.
Oh, did
about
we?
The OVA, remember? I was doing an internal live tweet of the...
That's right. We meant to... This is going to be something exclusive for our Patreon members that I wanted to mention. So sometimes we have a movie night and we started at the very, like, the oldest OVAs or yaoi movies, whatever, and then we worked our way to the present, essentially. Yeah, so we've already done Viewfinder, but we will share our comments that we make whenever we watch these things.
Yeah.
So in March, that's our next movie night. I don't recall what we're going to see, but we'll record it.
I think we're up to Super Lovers, maybe.
Are we?
That one may have some good comments. So if they're really bad or like not engaging or something, we often make snippy comments and laugh while we're watching it. Viewfinder was one of those, and I started writing them down because we're really funny.
Yes, we are. So we'll share like snippets of it while we're watching it. Yeah, we'll share that. So that'll be exclusive for our Patreon members. We only have 3 people on the group right now, but you can join for as little as $1, and that way you can start voting on what we review next. After Viewfinder, and then we'll review another by that mangaka.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to move on to webcomics, which is going to be really juicy.
Yes, lots of good webcomics. Yeah.
All right, we've gone on long enough, guys. See you later.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the 801 Reviewed. You can find more episodes of this show and the 801 podcast on Simplecast and iTunes. If you enjoy the show or want to help us out, please consider leaving a review or donate to our Patreon page. And remember, don't start a shipping war.